This is the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. I do two podcasts, this one on the Middle East and another on mainstream American politics. Thank you for listening to this podcast where we talk about issues in the Middle East, Palestine, Israel, and American policies. You can get more information on all of my podcasts by visiting www.hanania.com.
And His Excellency Sheikh Salman, I want to thank the Kingdom of Bahrain and the people of Bahrain for being such gracious hosts. When I came and visited with you and your father about a couple months ago in February and presented to him the way we were thinking about solving this conflict and the vision, he said, "This is great. This is exactly the thinking that we need in this region," and asked that we come back here and try to assemble a bunch of leaders to talk this through and to start framing it. And we've been very, very overwhelmed by the reaction we've received. So I really want to thank you. I also want to thank President Trump for his vision and leadership and commitment to bringing peace to the Middle East and also to throughout the entire world. I want to thank Secretary Mnuchin for leading President Trump's delegation to this workshop and for all the amazing work that you and your team have done to help us make this a reality. I also want to thank everyone for joining us here today. The people in this room are not people who shy away from hard problems, and everyone here would like to see us bring an end to this Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The fact that so many global leaders and experts on investment came from all around the world shows that there is a serious interest, appetite, and willingness by the global community to help the Palestinian people if the right context can be created. For too long, the Palestinian people have been trapped in an inefficient framework of the past. The peace to prosperity vision is a modern framework for a brighter and more prosperous future. It is a vision of what is possible with peace. The conventional wisdom about the fate of the Palestinians is remarkably consistent. In meeting after meeting and conference after conference, I hear the same broken record of negativity about why progress is not possible. When I ask my counterparts why they continue to repeat these same tired talking points, despite no evidence that they lead to progress, they say, "Well, we've always said these things, and we've always done things this way." While politicians pay lip service, the world moves forward, and the Palestinian people continue to be left behind. We all agree on the following goals. We want to see peace, security, and prosperity for Palestinians, Israelis, and everyone else throughout the world. We want the freedom for people to worship without persecution. We want people to live together with dignity and respect. And we want to create better lives for their children and for future generations. We do not need to spend a lot of time discussing how we got here. We all know how we got here. Over the past decades, there have been many stops and starts in the Palestinian economy. Numerous well-intended programs, investments, and plans have been derailed by violence, political instability, and the lack of a resolution to the long-standing core issues of this conflict. To be clear, economic growth and prosperity for the Palestinian people are not possible without an enduring and fair political solution to the conflict, one that guarantees Israel's security and respects the dignity of the Palestinian people. However, today is not about the political issues. We'll get to those at the right time. The goal of this workshop is to begin thinking about these challenges in a new way. Let's try to view this conflict and the potential of the entire region through a different lens and work together to develop a concrete plan to try and achieve it. For a moment, imagine a new reality in the Middle East. Imagine a bustling commercial and tourist center in Gaza and the West Bank, where international businesses come together and thrive. Imagine the West Bank as a blossoming economy full of entrepreneurs, engineers, scientists, and business leaders. Imagine people and goods flowing quickly and securely throughout the region as economics become more integrated and people become more prosperous. This isn't a stretch. This is actually the historical legacy of the Middle East, specifically of Gaza and the West Bank. It is a legacy of great cultures coming together as a center of commerce, innovation, and prosperity. At its apex, the commercial traffic on the desert routes through Arabia, culminating in Gaza, was so dense that historians compared it to an army on the march. But in recent years for much of the Middle East, and longer for the Palestinians, the only armies on the march have been armies. But in recent years, instead of building on a history of innovation and entrepreneurship, the Palestinians became the highest per capita donor aid recipients in the world with no plan and no end in sight. I might be in the minority, but I believe that this can change. President Trump ran on a very straightforward platform: to keep people safe and to create the opportunity for prosperity in America and throughout the world. The last 2 years have been a lot of hard work, but by implementing his policies, President Trump has created the best economy that America has seen in a very long time, perhaps even the best we've ever had. Prosperity is not something that is given to people. Prosperity is something that is earned with smart planning, determination, and fortitude. The Palestinian people have these qualities: intelligence, strength, perseverance, courage, and great supply. Let's harness these strengths and create the opportunity for them to succeed. My direct message to the Palestinian people is that despite what those who have let you down in the past tell you, President Trump and America have not given up on you. This workshop is for you. The vision we developed and released, if executed correctly, will lead to a better future for the Palestinian people, a future of dignity, prosperity, and opportunity. You can change your course for the positive if we are willing to try new things and think outside of the traditional box. Peace can only be achieved if it comes with a pathway for people to improve their lives. One who is more hopeful and sees opportunity for his or her family will put energy into pursuing opportunity instead of blaming others for their current misfortune. That is why agreeing on an economic pathway forward is a necessary precondition to resolving what is a previously unsolvable political situation. Enormous amounts of money have been wasted on corruption, munitions, and conflict in this region. Imagine if that money was invested in infrastructure, education, workforce training, and healthcare. When we reached out to one Middle Eastern investment fund to attend this workshop, they politely replied that they didn't think they should attend because they don't invest in this region. That was exactly our point. We want people to be thinking about how we can create the condition to invest in this region. We need to bring change so that this region can become investable and as a center of opportunity, as opposed to an area that is written off and overlooked. So how do we begin to make this change? We need the right plan, and we need to create the right environment. While we endeavored to create the framework, the hope from this workshop is that we will be able to freely and constructively discuss the different ideas, get peer feedback, modify, and then ultimately finalize a vision as a globally supported plan. We are joined here today by representatives from the world's leading institutions. We're very fortunate to have with us the president of the World Bank, David Malpass. We're very fortunate to have the chairman of the IMF, Christine Lagarde. Major donor countries, the largest companies, investment funds from all over the world, builders, innovators, job creators, capital allocators, and you'll be hearing from a lot of them over the next couple of days. I want to thank you all for being here and for expressing an interest in using your knowledge and capital, not just to create returns, but also to drive change in the real world for real people. This group has the ability to work together to create a historic opportunity for the Palestinian people and the people of this region. Some people have mockingly called this effort the deal of the century, but at its core, it is not just about making a deal. In fact, this effort is better referred to as the opportunity of the century, if leadership has the courage to pursue it. This is about creating opportunity for the Palestinian people. This is about creating opportunity for the people throughout the Middle East. If implemented correctly and competently, the economic plan I will go through now will lead to growth and better lives. To create this vision, we have drawn from the lessons of the most successful economic transformations of the last 75 years. We studied, along with the world's leading experts and thinkers and economists, Singapore, South Korea, Japan, Peru, Poland, China, and America. We took the elements that we thought could apply, and we tried to avoid the areas where we've seen mistakes and other attempts that people took over the years to try to implement these reforms. What we have developed is the most comprehensive economic plan that has ever been created specifically for the Palestinians and for the broader Middle East. We can turn this region from a victim of past conflicts into a model for commerce advancement throughout the world. Over the next 2 days, I want us all to keep in mind the following question. Should we find reason to stay with the status quo, a broken system that favors few at the expense of many, or should we push together to find new solutions and fight for a brighter future filled with opportunity and hope? I know which one I want to choose. I appreciate you all embracing this challenge with me. The United States and President Trump are committed to finding a better future for the Palestinians, for the Israelis, and for the entire Middle East. By working together, we can reach our ultimate goal, which is a real peace that leads to prosperity. Thank you. Thank you. So I'm now going to transition over to the presentation. We released the plan, 3 days ago, and I'm sure everyone here has read all 140 pages of what we put together, every line item, but I'll give you just a quick summary of what we did. So we put together the plan based on three pillars. The first pillar is to unleash the economic potential of the Palestinian people and of the region, to empower the people, and then to enhance the Palestinian governments. You can't do one without the other two, and you need to be doing all three at the same time in order to make this work. So if we implement this program, this is a very specifically designed program, we go down to the different projects, we built it based on a lot of the work that's been done in the past, we believe over time that we can double the GDP of the Palestinians, we can create over 1 million new jobs, we can reduce the unemployment rate to single digits, and we can reduce the poverty rate by 50%. This is not an easy thing to do, but it's something that can be implemented. We've had this peer-reviewed extensively, and we have invited everyone here and everyone throughout the world, we've released this publicly, to give us their thoughts and feedback. So, since I know a lot of people here like to start with the numbers, we go with a program that's about a $50 billion program. This comes from grants, which is about $13 billion. This is all done over 10 years. Then we do subsidized loans, about $25 billion, and we have the private capital, about $11 billion. If you notice the early years, we're heavy on the grants and figuring out how to get the subsidized loans more and over time, because we're trying to create the necessary conditions for people to be able to make this area investable. Right now, there's not a lot of private capital, there's not a lot of subsidized loans coming into this area, because you're in a position where there's not the basic infrastructure necessary, and you also don't have the rules-based system that's necessary for people to invest. You know, an example is a lot of the leading Palestinian business people who we speak to wanted to be here tonight. They were told by the authority not to come, and because they rely on them for their livelihood, it's not a free market where they can make those distinctions. So the first part, which is unleashing the economic potential, basically has four elements. Number one is constructing the essential infrastructure, which is necessary for businesses to work. Number two is opening up the West Bank and Gaza. Right now, they're very isolated enclaves. You have a lot of fear of terror. There's not a great amount of security. And because of that, the security's become very tight around the borders. Because of the tight security, I was talking to one developer, you can't get concrete in, you can't get a lot of goods in, and that makes the cost of living there much more expensive. Again, if we have a real peace and there's not a fear of people doing terrorism, then all of a sudden, we can really thin the borders and allow for a much faster flow of goods and people. Promoting private sector growth. A lot of the historical aid that's been done here has been done to the government, and that hasn't necessarily created a private sector. We want to make sure that the private sector is empowered so that the wealth can really be distributed amongst the people, because that has not been the case to date. Then obviously strengthening the regional development and the integration with the neighbors. So we broke each of these things down into different categories, and we have, you know, obviously the foundational things we need to do. We have the infrastructure, the roads and rails, the border crossing, the power, the water and wastewater, digital services, and then we went industry by industry for where we thought that the Palestinians could have a strategic advantage. I'm not going to highlight all of those. If you go online and you look at the plan we put out, we actually have a detailed business plan for how do you do each of these things individually, but I'll just focus maybe on the power to show you what we did. If you go to the West Bank and Gaza, right now the West Bank gets about 99% of their electricity from outside. So they're not really power independent. You have the ability to develop an ecosystem. They don't have the ability to do power generation. If you go in Gaza, they have one diesel plant, which right now doesn't even have the ability to get in the goods that it needs to operate. This would be about building new power infrastructure. We would convert the diesel plants to natural gas. We'd figure out how to get pipelines to get the necessary gas in, and we would figure out how to make them much more self-reliant. We'd also build out the power grid. Now, again, a lot of these investments people are unwilling to make because people don't want to put good money after bad money. They've seen in the past, they've made these investments, they've tried to help out the Palestinian people, and then all of a sudden, there's some conflict that breaks out, and a lot of this infrastructure gets destroyed. So what we have here is very detailed plans, and these are things that we can phase in over over time, assuming there is a real ceasefire or a real peace, and there's the opportunity for people to start making these investments. So the next one is empowering the people. Having great infrastructure doesn't matter as much if you don't have the people to do the jobs. We want to be matching the people with the jobs that are available today and the jobs that will be available in the future. So the Palestinian people, as you'll hear from one of the speakers tomorrow, have one of the highest literacy rates in the world. That's due to a lot of the aid that's been done over the years, which has been good, but we want to enhance the education services to teach them a lot more skill-based training that will help them have better careers and better jobs. A lot of the employers in the region are actually not able to find the qualified workforce that they're seeking to do the jobs and investments that they want to make. So we want to strengthen workforce development, invest in healthcare, and then also improve the quality of life. That's part of the plan. So again, these are the three components, and I'll focus right now just on the educational quality, but each of these elements, if you go into the website, which is on the bottom, you'll be able to see that we have a very detailed plan built out for each one, but you have to do all of these things at the same time. You need STEM education, we focus on youth and women, workforce training, but I'll focus just on the educational quality. These are the different programs we've identified and the investments needed in order to help them catapult us to a next level so that they can have a skilled workforce that's qualified to take on the jobs that will be created from all this investment. The third pillar is enhancing the Palestinian governance. Tomorrow we'll be talking a little bit about property rights, which is a very essential component for people being able to get loans, for people being able to have investments, but we need a better business environment. And you know, people are very quick in the Middle East. You know, for the last 70 years, the unifying feature has been to blame Israel for a lot of people's problems, but a lot of the problems really should be looking at governance and the fact that people, leaders have often deflected blame on Israel for a lot of the shortcomings from within the countries. If we can create a better business environment there, it will make it investable. So there's two major components that need to happen if people want to see better lives. We need to figure out how do we make it a safe environment, then we can actually have people willing to invest, goods going in, people flowing in and out, and then we need an environment where people know that if they're investing, then there won't be as much corruption, the money actually can trickle down to the people, and when people have property rights, then it actually works that way. And we'll talk about that more extensively tomorrow. One thing that I get asked a lot from people when I share this program with them is they say, well, okay, who's going to implement this, right? You know, we haven't seen a lot of ability to implement something like this, and this is a major scale program. That's something we've studied very, very carefully, and if you look at the last 25 years, we have some very good examples, not just here, but in other places, of where big programs have worked and been implemented. We've studied those, and we've tried to create a mechanism that's in line with those, and then we've also had 25 years of experience to see how money could be wasted, stolen, all different kinds of bad things, which we do not want to see happen. So we've envisioned creating a master fund that then can govern this, and we would release it in tranches. One of the things I like to say, maybe this is from my previous life in business as opposed to being in government, is we like to reward results, we don't like to reward efforts. And I think that that's a very important component. So what we would envision is that we would get commitments for this, we would make it in tranches, and then as you achieve different milestones of reform, then the next tranches will be released. This is one slide that I actually thought was very interesting, which shows that we're actually starting from a pretty strong place relative to peers. When I show this to people, they're actually quite surprised. If you go on the right side, you'll see that you have the West Bank and Gaza with a GDP per capita of about $3,000 per person. If you go to the West Bank, which is more governed right now, you have about $3,800 per capita. If you compare that to Egypt, it's $2,500, Jordan's $4,000, Lebanon's $8,500, Morocco's $3,000, and Tunisia's $3,500. If you go to debt to GDP, you know, you have Egypt at 100%, Jordan at 94%, West Bank and Gaza are at less than half of that. So starting from a relatively strong place, that if we can start doing these investments, create a peace environment, you know, create a good security apparatus, there is a ton of potential for people to really start rising in a very, very quick way. Finally, we constructed this in a way where we thought we can't just try to stimulate Gaza and the West Bank. You know, obviously we want to create a very prosperous global regional environment. Israel has a thriving economy. Imagine if Silicon Valley was cut off from the rest of California. That's kind of what we have right now in the Middle East. So obviously some form of peace would create prosperity, I think, for Israel, but also for everyone else throughout the region. But what we did is we put the majority of the projects in Gaza and the West Bank, but then we also figured out what projects can we do in Jordan, Egypt, and Lebanon to also figure out how to get those economies to start rising and better integrated as well. So we see tremendous potential. Again, people on this file try to be very skeptical. If you want me to come up with the reasons why this is hard, I can probably give you a longer list of reasons than anybody else. But again, our goal has been to try to come up with what is the best pathway forward? How can we break this deadlock that's been here for too long, and how can we focus on helping people make their lives? And that really is what, when President Trump comes to the office every day, he's focused on the American people. How can he help the American people improve their lives? And we took the same approach with the Israelis and the Palestinian people. The politicians tend to talk about political things. What we tried to focus on are, what are the things that will help people live better lives, help their families have better futures, help them pay their mortgages, help them be better providers? And we think that this plan can really accomplish that. So last slide is just showing you the breakdown in all the different industries. Again, all this detail is on the website, and I want people to review it very carefully. But it shows that the money that we'd be investing is fairly well distributed. Obviously, transportation, mobility, infrastructure with power and water, digital services, those are about half of it, and that's very, very critical. There's still government support. Right now, the government runs a deficit, but over time, they should be able to raise their tax base to be self-sustaining. And then, you know, education, tourism, natural resources, healthcare, home ownership, agriculture, manufacturing, quality of life. These are all components that you have to do at the same time. So I just want to thank everyone on the team who helped make this possible. I think that it's a very good first step. I do hope that the Palestinian people will take a look. I hope that we'll all be able to come together and try to come up with the best framework and put together this package and hopefully use this as a way to change the course of history in this region. So I just want to thank all of you. You know, this is not a conference where people are coming to benefit for themselves. You all have big responsibilities in a lot of places you can be, and the fact that you're showing up to do this shows that you care about the region, you care about doing good in the world, and you care about both the Israeli and the Palestinian people. So really thank you for taking the time out of your lives to come and be a part of this and to provide your feedback, and hopefully this will help us make a big step forward. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. We've had a discussion of all the issues facing Arabs in America and the Middle East, from Israel to Palestine, Syria, and more. Visit www.hanania.com to get more information on all of my podcasts and on my award-winning opinion columns.